My sister runs a Gallup Strengths Coaching consultation company down in Dallas. And one of the things that we've talked about a ton is what someone's nature is and natural gifts and strength and talents and strengths. Because what if you can find yourself in that zone, you won't even feel like you're working. You're just playing. You'd actually suck at teaching it because you don't know how you do it. Well, one of my natures is, we can summarize it as problem solving. I've got strategic at number one and individualization at number two. So coming up with these left field, seemingly unrelated solutions to how can you do this? How can you build that life? How can you offload some junk process that you don't want to be living and breathing in your business or in your life? I see the connections and I can help people with the connections. And so having done that in my own life, I then have turned it into the consulting business to where now I can actually help other people in their own companies, even if it's not the same industry as me, it doesn't matter. That's all the same life creation and life options design that I can do with some solutioning and help that way.
Welcome to Real Radio, episode 108 with Trevor Shade. You're listening to RIA Radio, the nationally trusted name in real estate investing. We dig deep to discover investors' why in real estate. If you want to skip all the BS and get in investors' heads, you're in the right spot. Be one of the thousands to check out RIAradio.com. Trevor's story was great, but then he drops that bomb right in the end of it about him getting sick. And I'm like, dude, afterwards, I'm like, dude, you got to start your future podcast interviews with this story. I go, it's kind of has that AJ Osborne kind of feel, you know, where he has this like, oh, I'm almost dead. And then I come out of it. And then this is who I became.
He rallied, man. He had a major health scare. Stay tuned to find out more about that toward the end of the episode. But he overcome some major adversity there. Marital challenges he had along, you know, kind of along the same timeline as having a huge health scare and a lot of just bad things that he was able to overcome in his life. So it's been, he's got kind of a triumphant story there, kind of like a Rocky type tale.
I don't know how he still has a full head of hair after all that.
I know, I'm jealous.
Yeah, I bet you would be.
Shut up. What have you been up to, Ted?
Hey, you know, I don't even know what I've been up to, man. Just been preparing heavily for this next upcoming RIA that we have going on.
Oh yeah, give us a plug.
Oh, they were already air by the time this happens, but we brought in the wonderful Sarah Weaver.
That's right.
And so Sarah Weaver came to town. I can't tell you how it is yet because it hasn't happened yet. But she was the first big name that we ever had on our podcast.
Uh-huh.
That was national outside of the Omaha area. And that was just the catalyst for keep on growing. So I'm super excited that she's going to be in town, with her coaching background. And now she has her staging business for Airbnbs around the country. She's traveling and trying to do her coaching in every continent around the world right now. So I tried to get her in to do this our interview today with us. But
oh, you did?
Yeah.
Wasn't she coming in? Is she already here?
Yeah, she's in town. She's staying with her grandmother.
Oh, nice. Yeah, 30-day stay author, Sarah Weaver, my niece once removed.
That's so weird.
Yeah, what episode was she? Do you remember?
I think she was right around 50.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So listeners, we'll link to that in the show notes. But Sarah is going to be, well, she was. A great guest for the Omaha RIA. That was her second one, right? Like she did the
Invest Her event that I think she
had that's right,
because
that's right.
She was part of their community.
Yep.
So this is the first time she's done our RIA event.
But yeah, I'm excited to see her again and hear all about her world travels and all the fun stuff. She's got a crazy life, man.
We definitely gotta get back on and catch up.
Yeah,
it was fun to catch up at BPCon also.
For sure. 39.
Ooh, I was totally off.
Nice.
I also put a little order in today.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I ordered one of those Tesla Cybertrucks.
Shut up. You did not.
Yeah.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Dude, well, I had one of those on order, and then I canceled my deposit. You had to put like $100 down. This was like 2 years ago.
Yeah, so now it's a little bit more because you're actually putting the order in for, it'll be here in a few months.
Wow.
Because they're out in their
Are you serious?
They're in full production.
You're getting one?
Yeah, it's like an 8,000. Okay, so right now they're doing a special. If you pre-order it right now, it's like $13,000 off price.
What are those things? What do they run now? I know there's various levels or whatever.
So the, with the discounted price, they're ranging from $49,000 to $98,000.
Okay.
And I got just the base all-wheel drive model. And with the discount, it came to $68,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's an, I think there's an $8,000 tax credit for buying an electric vehicle on top of that. And man, I added up before I ordered it. And I'm like, oh man, I spend $1,200 a month in gas. And I was like, there's going to be some savings in that aspect. Plus,
here comes the justification for it, Dennis.
Plus, I spent $22,000 in repairs on my truck last month.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Owie.
Yeah. So I was like, I don't really want to. It's time for a new vehicle.
They're almost like practical joke ugly, but they have the cool factor. I want to get one. I wish I hadn't just bought. I didn't know they were coming out or they were in production now, but yeah, they're something.
They're really sick on the inside.
Are they?
Yeah.
Where did you get it? Did you see one? Where, like, did you just order online?
They're all online on Tesla.com.
So you haven't like test driven one or anything like that?
No, they're not. They just went out for shipping this week.
Oh.
So the first people that pre-ordered them are getting theirs right now.
Gotcha. Well, that's cool. So, we'll have to do a mobile Ria Radio production out of the Tesla.
Oh, we can do they do in a TV show where they do karaoke inside the vehicle.
Okay. Yeah, we'll do that. Are you going to sing some Tool?
Yeah, sure.
Speaking of singing questionable songs, I just got back from taking my daughter to Des Moines for her very first concert. So she's really into, like, I guess they call it emo music now. Like, I don't know what they used to call it back in the day, but it's kind of like but it's more angry than that.
Okay.
So it's like alternative people that you really cut off in traffic and then they started singing. That's kind of what we're at here. But no, she was super excited about it. We bought the tickets a while back and it was just her and I. So we did a little daddy-daughter weekend up there.
It wasn't in the band?
It was Pierce the Veil.
Pierce the Veil, okay.
Which I actually ended up, I do like some of their songs. Some I could really do without. But the first, like we were talking about before, the opening acts, and there were three of them, were just basically people screaming as loud as they could and playing thrash metal out of tune. So it was brutal the first like 3 hours of that deal because they didn't even come on stage until like 10 o'clock.
Well, Denless mentioned that she was wearing headphones.
Yes.
So like if she has headphones in, could she really hear the music?
Oh yeah, she said it was like listening to the radio. Believe me. You could put concrete in your ear canals and you could still hear that for at least the first three openers. It was wow. And that was my second concert in 3 days that I went to, man. I'm knocking on, you know, 50's door here. So that's pretty good for an old guy.
And you went to see Bush also, right?
I did, yeah. Bush on Thursday night, which that was awesome. God. I would see them again in a heartbeat. So that was a lot of fun. We had a great little, you know, quick trip to Des Moines. Went to one of the malls there that's really well known, Jordan Creek Mall, and got to fight the Christmas shopping crowds. But it was a good time, well worth it.
I posted on my Facebook channel. I put, hey, nothing like waking up to some Tool in the morning, and randomly like Jason Dries like posted on there. Oh, I'm a huge fan. Da, da, da. I'm following him, and I think he said he's going to 5 or 6 shows and taking his kids to half of them.
You know what's funny about that is, so Jason Dries is a pretty, you know, well-known business coach. He coaches Brandon Turner, who's name dropped him 1,000 times, but supposedly really,
book
really
author.
Good business coach, book author. But what's funny, when I saw that post on Facebook or Instagram or whatever, and I saw his comment on there, I was like, there's no way this is that Jason Dries. So I actually clicked on his profile. I was like, this has got to be another Jason Dries, just like a rando, you know? And I was like, what in the world? Why is he commenting on Ted's thread? It was just, I was just chuckling to myself about that. But
Alex Fleece jumped in on that one too.
Yeah, I saw that.
I was like, look at that. A little Tool brings us all together.
That's funny.
I love a good show. So if you guys ever want to go to a show and we can all agree on the type of music, I mean, Michael Jackson's already dead, but I'm sure we can find something we can all agree to go to.
There's got
to
be somebody that covers him really well, though.
Yeah, that would be fun. I would actually love to, you know, take Denless to a MJ show. Yeah,
me too. Yeah. Yep. Look at him. Oh, that's funny. All right. So what else is going on here? Let's maybe throw some quick news in here. We had a couple of things that I wanted to call out from the past week. Today's news segment is brought to you by JM Real Estate Capital.
Hi, it's Rob, JM Real Estate Capital. We're the money guys that you need to know for all your real estate investments. Talk to us. We can do what your local bank can't or won't do. We don't have millions. We have trillions with a T to lend. 844-WE-CLOSE or go online, jmrecapital.com. That's jmrecapital.com. JM Real Estate Capital, smart solutions for the real estate investor.
Sad story, Charlie Munger, the living legend, is no longer living. He passed away this last week. This will air a little bit later, but Warren Buffett's partner in crime and business.
99 years old.
99, lived quite the life. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Berkshire when there's a changing of the guard, especially after Buffett ends up stepping down, or when his time's up, because he's getting up there too. But that was kind of sad and end of an era for Berkshire.
Yeah, and then when the day Warren passes, that's gonna be a
with us being located in Omaha, they always have the annual Berkshire Days here, which is a big deal. A ton of people come from around the world to that. Famously, Warren and Charlie Munger were always featured there, answering questions from the crowds and all that stuff. So it'll be. I'll be interested to see what happens this time around when he's no longer in the picture. I wonder if Warren's going to kind of like bow out of being the front man on that, or how they're going to handle it. But yeah, kind of sad.
If somebody has extra tickets to the next one, let me know. I'll go with you.
No, you're not a Berkshire A holder?
I'm not.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll change that. Christmas gift for you.
Yes.
One other thing I wanted to point out. This was kind of I saw a couple of Instagram reels about this. There was a title company that was a pretty big one, and I should have written the name of it down here, but they got attacked by a ransomware. I think I mentioned that when we were talking offline last week about this, but they basically got hacked, and a ransomware attack ended up holding hostage about, like, I think it was like $1.3 million or something like that, that was in escrow for a deal. So not just the $1.3 million, but it shut down their entire operation. And they were owners of multiple title companies, I think, around the country. So there was a ton of ripple effects with that. So a lot, can you imagine, like, being in a deal, or like you were waiting to get, to get your funds for that, and they're just like, oh yeah, sorry, we got hacked. We'll get your money when we can.
We're going to pay your
money. It froze everything.
We're going to pay your money on the cover this ransom.
Yeah, I know, right? That is super scary.
So you used to own a title company. So could you imagine going through that?
We did go through that. We had a fraud case. Yeah. Well, it was not that, not exactly ransomware, but we had a fraud case that was a big, big deal for our, little operation. But we ended up getting it figured out. But those are terrible to go through, which I was going to actually mentioned today. So what do you do anything special to, like, kind of safeguard your data or your stuff that you have on your computer, whether it's emails or files or any of that stuff? Anything out of the ordinary that you do?
So unlike you, I'm all Apple, and Apple has their encrypted systems with all their codes.
Mm-hmm.
So I use all the encrypted codes, so all my passwords are completely different from one to the other. So each one's like this 14 digit super long. And so I guess that's one thing I do. I don't pay for any of the services.
Do you do, I probably shouldn't talk about what you do and don't do on air here, but this was kind of dumb of me, but like a couple of years ago, I remember I was just like, I don't need dual authentication. That's just, what do I need that for or whatever. And then I got hacked like twice, and it was, they tried to basically commit fraud by sending emails from my account to our title company and one of my business partners. And basically, we had to, nothing happened with it, but it very well could have, because they were obviously monitoring our emails to figure out how we talked and how we communicated and kind of like our, the way we wrote. Pretty scary. But yeah, I just wanted to mention that because, like, if you guys don't have dual authentication, make sure you do that, especially on your emails and files, and, you know, get something that randomly changes your passwords. Don't use, like, you know, password 123 for your password.
Is that what you used to do?
No. No, mine are okay. Mine are really long, but I have a phrase or a couple phrases that I've memorized with a bunch of different characters and stuff. So
I definitely need to get in the service. I do the dual authentication, though.
Yeah.
So I do believe in that.
Cool. Let's see. I have a what we lovingly call
Golden Nugget, the most famous section of our podcast.
Is it? Well, we'll have to put that out to vote. This is I think you actually knew this, and I brought this up last week, but I was touring a property with my business partners, the Foleys, and we were looking at an old Embassy Suites.
Oh, I saw the pictures on that.
And we walked through this property, and the whole thing was, you know, shut down. So it was super weird. And
such,
like,
a cool
kind of creepy.
It's such a cool building, though, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes. But we went through it, and what I didn't know was, so we walk into this place, and there's like, it looked literally like somebody was having a cocaine party there. It looked like Scarface, a set of Scarface. I'm like, what is going on? And the guys, the guy that showed it to us, he was like their project manager or caretaker or whatever. He's like, yeah, we had some vandals break in, and they got all the fire extinguishers and just, like, went to town.
All of them?
Yes. So all the chemical, you know, flame, whatever, flame stuff. Flame putter outer chemical. I can't think of the word for it, but it was everywhere. It was so super funny.
Just one room or like the whole building?
It was the entire, like, courtyard area. It was just a coating of dust. So, but my gold nugget here is, if you have, like, an abandoned property, especially a large one, like if you were buying an apartment complex or a building that you know, need to keep tabs on, because you are going to have periodic break-ins. It doesn't matter, like, where you're located. It could be good area or not. But they actually had one thing I forgot to mention. There were these silhouettes, like, where you it looks like a dude holding somebody hostage, right? And they're on these papers, and they're laying everywhere. And there's, like, bullet casings and just this random stuff. And I'm like, what happened here? And he's like, oh, yeah, I contacted the police department, and they have their canine and SWAT units that are basically doing training exercises here. So there's a lot of police presence there, and it kind of, like, scares people off a little bit to know that, you know, there's activity there, police activity there. And they were actually doing drones that were, you know, kind of like they're practicing indoor, you know, like raids or whatever. And they were using drones to go up the different levels and go into rooms and stuff. Super cool.
Sanjay does that with his hotel.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think you told me that. But anyway, that's my gold nugget is, if you have an abandoned property, it might be worth your while just to give the police department a heads up and just say, hey, you know, this is a vacant building. If you guys want to conduct any training exercises there, you're more than welcome. And I don't know if they pay for that or what, but probably not.
I don't think so. I think it's just free security.
But yeah, so kind of like a boost in your property security, just to maybe, you know, worth a phone call.
I remember I was walking on this property that Sanjay had to go check it out, and then they had the drug dogs, and he's like, just don't touch anything because we have meth and different things in different drawers.
Oh, wow!
And it's like the actual drugs were sitting there, so the dogs could find it.
Were you thankful because you had a pocket full of heroin or something?
I was so nervous.
Oh, that's funny. But that was today's
golden nugget. Well, let's get into this amazing and very long episode with Trevor Shade.
Okay, so you hail from my neck of the woods originally. Did you know this, Ted?
The middle of nowhere?
Glenwood, Iowa. Am I right?
Yeah.
So your formative years.
Well, Glenwood is way more... way more of a city than something like where Owen's been from.
Well, I worked in Glenwood.
And I
Radio Shack. Baby.
I technically lived in Malvern. It was just before.
Did you really?
That's right. Right. Like, so, yeah. So if we really want to get.
Did you grow up in Malvern?
No. Okay. I was one or so. I don't remember anything, but it is on the books. Yes.
But he escaped.
But you're born in Glenwood?
I was born in Red Oak, if we really want to go
Red
there.
Oak. Yeah. Oh, God. This keeps getting worse.
I know. I'm like, do we Red Oak? Can we edit this part out?
No.
When I was in my days of doing foundations and waterproofing for Thrasher, I spent a lot of time in Red Oak. There was a ton of foundation and water issues out in that area.
Okay. Yeah, I was in the hospital. I think that was it. I think my little stay there for 3 days.
Did they just go there to have you?
I think. I guess.
You didn't know if your parents would ever live there?
No, they never lived there. So, yeah, apparently it was the closest to Malvern, I think, is where they were living. And
okay,
where,
so you are a Malvarian.
Just for the 1 year, yeah.
Malvernian.
Malvernian, yeah. And then
sounds
I think,
like Mount Vernon, doesn't it?
And there's then, there's actually a website, malvernia.com.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Did you create that?
Right. Maybe. Maybe my mom did.
Just so you feel a little cooler.
Right. That's right. Okay, so you grew up in Southwest Iowa. How did you end up in Omaha?
Yeah, technically Bellevue. So Southwest Iowa, that was the super young years stretch. And I think by the time I was three or four, I was in South O and Bellevue. And that was the primary upbringing was in those two areas. And then, yeah, just grew up a very, very, normal middle class Bellevue, Nebraska, kind of a, you know, half suburb here of Omaha. And did a year of college down in Lincoln and walked onto the Huskers football team. I was 6'5", 235 pounds and fast. And so it just really worked out pretty well. I didn't know in high school, it was probably about 6 weeks after the fact, I learned I was like second in the state in fumble recoveries. I had no idea. Defensive end was just a very simple thing to me. It was like, you just don't let anybody outside of you and you hit the quarterback every play. That was it. I didn't have to know anything else, and I just hit people. And so, yeah, I did the football thing, and I did school, but always was near the Lincoln and Omaha area.
What years were you a Husker?
2000-2001 season. Okay. I was Solich's second year.
Okay.
Yeah. Went to the Alamo Bowl. I got this cool jersey with my name on the back and everything, these patches. It's nuts.
I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I got a couple of pictures, and, I'm like 18, 24 inches thick. I'm this two humans. It was really neat.
Did you know Ted used to be the water boy for the Huskers? No,
I'm kidding. I knew. I recognized.
I was trying to think of like a creative like movie line from that movie that I could bring up, but I had nothing.
Oh, water boy.
Yeah.
Tackling fuel. There we go. Now we're all going to fall
mama
apart.
Said, mama said HGO is good for the body.
Mama said.
Okay, so what happened after college? What was your first gig?
Yeah, multi-level marketing, if we count that, right? We talked
about
this.
Amway?
Yeah, it was...
Did you recruit people at the mall?
I recruited people everywhere, and I was amazing at it. Like, I knew that I could meet 10 people a night, and four of them would give me phone numbers, two of them would be real, and I would actually have two legitimate real people that wanted to hear, well, what are you talking about? Sure, I can filter some business ideas. And so, yeah, I wouldn't even go home until I met enough people in a night until I had two legitimate phone numbers, and I had the numbers work to, I just got to go meet 10 people every night at a gas station, in the bread aisle at the grocery store. You had to rotate the places because the employees at the mall now knew you after years of doing
the bread aisle.
They knew exactly who you were. And
I worked at Sears in Oakview, and I felt like
again. I
felt like every single day I had somebody from Amway approaching me and trying to hit me up on something there.
Yeah, you can't do employees.
It was terrible.
That's a bad program. You can't do employees. But
a couple guys got me hooked and like got me to a point where they didn't tell me what it was, and like, I'm like, got me to a point where I was like, what are we talking about? And then I was like, okay, nope, I'm out of this. And I like met him at their house.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And the sales component of it, and what I learned in the books that I studied and what I read, and there was so much that's valuable. And I learned about some business structure. Like, I actually did gain a ton of really good out of it. I was even, by some of the definitions, I was successful in multi-level marketing. So it was all great. But it was all of a sudden I could tap into other options and other ventures. You know, when the commodity I had to spend was time, I had no credit with any banks and I had no knowledge of real estate and I had no ability to step into that world or cash for down payments. I had time. Well, in multi-level marketing, you can spend a lot of time. And so that's what I did. And that's why the venture worked at that time.
Now, was the first company you went with Amway?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it was technically the era of the online first launch, Quickstar, 2000, 2001 type era. And then it later transitioned to Amway Global. Yeah.
Now, I have to bring this up.
This is amazing. Yeah. I can't wait. Yeah, so I know this about you.
In Borders, when Borders was open in Omaha, I was... at the time, a financial planner. So I had a suit on and I was going looking through business books and whatever. And I happened to notice this guy there, and he had a suit on too or whatever. And he's like looking at kind of the same stuff I am. And we started talking, and next thing you know, he's like, oh yeah, I'm in, you know, I do this online business. Mm-hmm. And he started telling me about this thing. I was like, that sounds pretty cool, actually, like, you know, building a downline and like, but we didn't get it all into these. Like, yeah, matter of fact, there's this you know, group, they're getting together at the at this hotel in Regency.
Yep. Marriott, absolutely.
And and so I'm like, yeah, all right, that's cool, maybe I should check that out. So I go home and I tell Jen, my wife, about this, and she's like, what is this, like, what's going on with this? And I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, you know, the guy seemed pretty cool, and you know, it's no pressure or whatever. We're just, you know, he just said, come show up. There's gonna be a lot of people there. Learn more about it. No pressure. So I talk her into going with me, and we show up, and I go in, and they're like, oh, you know, what's your name, whatever. There's probably like, I don't know, like 200 people there, maybe more. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, Owen Dashner, and they say, oh yeah, here, come with us, and we'll show you to your seat. And I walk in, and there's like this huge, you know, like conference room or ballroom or whatever. And they walk me all the way to the front and put me in the like front two seats. And they're like, I'm like, what is, then my alarms, like internal alarms went off. I'm like, what the hell is going on here? Like, this feels weird. And then I was just trying to plot my escape. And then they get up, and he's like, and the guy that recruited me was a speaker. And turns out, you know the guy.
Yeah, and I'm really certain, when we're comparing these dates, I'm really certain I was in the room. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
This is great. I know.
What was the guy's name?
We'll call him Bob.
Yeah, his name was Bob. Oh. He's one of the Bobs. That's actually a fact. His name's Bob.
Yeah. Okay.
And anyway, so I'm like, what is going on? And then so go through the whole thing, and I was just like, I was kind of skeeved out a little bit, just because I felt like I got kind of like tricked,
bamboozled.
Yeah. Yeah, a little hoodwink.
Yeah, and yeah. Then so
Bob boozled.
Yeah, Bob boozled. Anyway, so we ended up bailing, and nothing ever happened out of that or whatever. I just gave some excuse on, you know, I can't be involved in any outside business activity because it's a like I have my, you know, Series 6 and 63 and whatever. Anyway, point being, it was Quickstar, right?
Yep. Hopefully. Yep.
Do you think we'll get sued? Hopefully not. Okay. Are they still around?
Can we bleep it out like a cuss word?
Yeah, there we go.
It's
Quick. Right. Beep.
I remember the Quickstar group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So are they still a thing?
No. So the company changed from Amway to Quickstar to Amway Global and changed, use it loosely and don't sue us. I know it was a whole actual change in side-by-side companies, but Amway Global is where it then ended.
Okay.
To the last of my knowledge, anyway.
So anybody not familiar with Amway, could you take a stab at describing kind of like how the multi-level marketing and like an Amway business structure is?
You know, it's interesting because honestly, if I really define it, it's not much different than any sales organization, other than you're not introducing what company you're with. And it's not this broadcast. I mean, if I was to work in a tiered sales structure of an insurance company, well, you've got, you know, some overseeing manager that gets a cut of what everybody ends up selling. You got the salespeople, and maybe you have other layers in there. It's no different than anything else. It's a sales organization. When it comes to a multi-level structure, a lot of the times they're just not broadcasting that they are a sales company and a sales structure with a product to sell. There's this idea of like a fear of sales, which then opens up the doors and the floodgates to who you might invite in. Because anybody that's afraid of the word sales, well, they're automatically disqualified if you tell them, hey, we sell stuff. But if you just don't say that, and you
really?
And you don't say any words of what company you're with and any notions they have from before, you just get to skirt around that until they're already in the door, right? It's like somebody that comes and looks at a house showing, and on the front end, just off of what they can read online, they would say no. But then once they're standing in it and they can see what it could be, and they start painting the picture for themselves. Okay. So it's similar to that. And there's a weird balance between that because, you know, some people can all of a sudden come around and decide, well, look, I can sell this. This is actually cool. I've heard plenty of people in Arbonne stories to where they would have never thought they would have done sales, but then all of a sudden they get into a community and a group and they end up honestly selling a lot. Mm-hmm. And as long as everything is shown really real of you're going to go get clients and you're going to sell some stuff. And then, yeah, if you buy some stuff yourself, then sure, you get credit for having bought it. But when it's told the other way of going and buying your stuff and having that be the business, well, that's nobody rents a bunch of houses from themselves and never lets anybody stay in them and makes a business out of it. So
that's a good point.
Right.
But so it's like, well, there's a lot of, you know, ones that we grew up with, like Avon, Arbonne, you mentioned Herbalife, Melaleuca, you know, Quickstar, Amway. Yep. Like there's a whole lot of organizations that are structured that way where
Mary Kay.
Thank you. Yeah. That's what I was trying to think of. Yeah. And then they create basically their whole pitch generally is around creating a downline.
Right.
So meaning you have people below you, they kick money up. It's like being a mob boss,
yeah,
more or less.
Yeah. Which again, if somebody calls it what it is, there are career recruiters that's what they do. Call it that. Say, hey, we're going to hire you to recruit and career recruit a whole bunch of people for sales. Mm-hmm. Because ultimately you need a product to get sold, right?
Keller Williams is kind of the same way.
They've got some structures.
Yeah, because they do a downline system. You recruit agents or you start a team. Every agent they start and then you get a percentage off. And then if they bring people in, you get a percentage off. And then even if you stay with the company and retire, that could be passed on to two generations of your children.
EXP's that way too, right?
I thought so.
I'm 95% sure they're that way too.
EXP is all KW execs went over and started that company.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
And now my personal opinion on it is when you set somebody up in an organization like that, whether it's a multi-level marketing or whether it's a real estate company, you now have people become dual-minded. And some extreme entrepreneurs, they can operate in that space, but I think that's really rare. I feel like that's a 1% type person that can actually be successful.
That's dual-minded. That's literally the question I was about to ask you. Like, why do people call multi-level marketing a scam? If it's set up where, I guess, if you have the entrepreneurial spirit or you have the entrepreneurial genes, you would be successful and you'd be able to make it.
Yeah.
But for the W-2 mentality people, obviously doesn't work out for them, and that's why they turn to a scam.
I think it's not a scam. No.
No, that's what people describe it as.
That's what they think in the mentality, yeah.
A lot of people describe it as they get scammed into MLMs.
MLM, yeah. You know? And I think it's because what I was saying about the information not being full given.
It's the recruitment method.
Yeah, because if I was to walk up to somebody and be like, hey, I sell products online. I use a store similar to like an Amazon store, and I help people get products. I like the products. I believe in them. Do you want to help people find some basic commodities, and you're able to profit share off of anything? If they decide to become a salesperson, they can sell too. And if you want to go gung ho and go recruit a bunch of salespeople, well, then it's just like any other sales organization. If I was to lead with that and then share the company name, there's a sense of pride and trust that's very real and authentic there. And I think because that's missing a lot of the time, not all the time, it doesn't feel like a normal conversation where there's trust and respect.
And those organizations, are there sales training? Do they have sales trainings?
Yeah, I would say so. I think honestly, okay, so that's where a lot of my gratitude comes in. I mean, the books that I've read, I was not a reader. I paid people to read books for me when I was very young and had you know, school papers and such and had to buy bibliographies and all that. And it's not recommendation if there's young listeners out here. This is not a good way to go.
Carson.
Right? Yeah. And so I was not a reader, but all of a sudden when I had somebody tell me, hey, this book is actually usable in your life, and I wanted what they had, well, then I would trust that and I'd read the book, and it was amazing. And all of a sudden I learned about taking a genuine interest in other people. And then I started learning about the psychology that got me into Gallup Strengths and Emergenetics and all of these different decision-making models that people make. And it turned into one, a sales structure that I then built for a real estate team in which very few people left for the first 5 years of us. I mean, zero, actually, very few. Zero left for 5 years of even starting a real estate team. And it turned into the commission structures, and it turned into the culture creation. And so, you know, did I put a bunch of money, and did I actually, if you were to really look at a true P&L, go really backwards in that business venture? Definitely. Absolutely. was I able to find the silver linings and give meaning to some of it? Also, definitely. So I can hang in a space of grateful and gratitude.
So you learned some valuable sales skills and organizational structure, like methodologies, mm-hmm. through working in multi-level marketing,
yeah.
in consumer products primarily. Yeah. You then, now I don't know if it was right after then, but you ended up in the tech world, right? You ended up in IT. How did that That's happen? Right.
Yeah. So I've been writing computer code since I was in about fifth grade. Honestly, I feel like I got picked because I was tall. I did my homework. I had a blue collar father, right? And I worked hard, but really I was like easy to pick out of a crowd. And so I started learning BASIC.
Were you on an Apple IIc?
It was an Apple. It was one of those monster floppy disks, and it did the whole grinding
thing. The 5 1/4.
It was a 5 1/4. That's it. Yep. Had the black screen with the amber text. Uh-huh. Even it was that old school. And you know, you could program each pixel, one pixel at a time, and make an American flag wave. And it was like, you know, the basics of a GIF image that
you,
we know
you,
today.
You spend like 8 days nonstop just coding, and then you get like a blip of light on the screen.
That's right.
I did that too, like on an Apple IIc computer. Right. Like I did programming when I was in high school. Yeah, it took forever. And then you're like, oh my God, this is so cool. And it's like a blip of light, and then there's another blip of light at the top that's supposed to represent like an alien or something.
Right.
And then like a light goes from the bottom to the top, and it evidently is killing the alien.
Yep.
You gotta use a lot of imagination.
It's unreal.
Back in the early days.
Yeah. Yeah. And it never turns out like what's in your head. You go, I have square blocks to work with. It's like well, what's that?
It's like Minecraft versus reality.
It is. You're like, oh, that's not really a curved face.
Do you still have those floppy disks?
Probably. Yeah, my mom probably has them in the storage in the basement.
It'd be kind of cool if you brought those out.
Yeah, I don't know that they would work anymore.
Yeah, what are you going to put them in? I mean,
there's probably people that still use like Tandy computers and Apple IIcs and whatever, just because they're like Big Bang Theory.
Yeah. All right. All right. So then,
nerds,
to all the listeners, reach out, comment on all of the posts, and bring your Apple IIcs to the deck here. Let's get this going,
and we'll plug them in and listen for the modem sound.
That's right.
Oh, this was
pre-modem.
It was pre-modem.
Right? It was
You're
pre-modem.
Right.
Modem.
Yeah. Yeah. This was pre-internet.
This is where you can implement the modem sound, just for anybody who hasn't heard it. There you go.
Right.
Doo, doo, doo.
All right.
Painful. So anyways, yes, that then turned into a tech sector of, you know, one of the things that I've observed in raising my kids is trying to figure out when do I put them in select sports and when do I not, right? When do I just let them go play at the Y and have fun with friends? And I came up with two terms in here with the help of a bunch of friends that there's a difference between an interest and a passion. And a kid that needs to throw the baseball, the second somebody gets home from work, that's a passion, right? They're obsessive. And they are going to be mad if they're playing club ball. Okay, so when I started rewinding that tape so I could actually have a place to measure in my own life and figure out what my kids' passions are, mine was computer programming. In about ninth grade, I didn't have any help, any guidance, any direction. I just started looking at the HTML source code of all these web pages and learning how to program HTML. And I was obsessive about it. I remember sitting on ICQ chat. You know, it was like the old AOL Messenger type thing, but you could see some people typing across. ICQ chat, talking to other people that were just as techie, and we'd copy and paste different pieces of HTML code back and forth and make our websites. And that's where I think the expansion of my tech side came. And I started learning that I could search all of the different search engines to find about every piece of code or everything that I might want. And it later turned into jobs. And so then as I stepped out of multi-level marketing and into group insurance was really where I started working for about a decade. And I could make my way through and start making some efficient processes and creating these techie little tools that saved everybody time. And that turned into like a Microsoft Access and Visual Basic and VA and basic coding that I could now create relational databases and go further down this tech sector in creating my own tools that made my life and other people's lives efficient and outsourced.
So you did that. How long were you in that space?
About a decade and a half, something like that, 10, 15 years. I did the programming, I did the learning. I really honestly talked about how I would just Google faster than my boss could realize that I didn't know what I was doing, and pull off these miracles that were amazing and these tools that they'd never heard of or seen before, And it wasn't quite that bad, but it was right up on that. And then through that, I got a Lean Six Sigma green belt opportunity within the company. And as I learned more about this process improvement and process design.
And that's, would you mind just maybe briefly describe what that is?
Because I thought it was a fraternity thing that you're
talking about. No.
Sigma
Phi Kappa. Yeah.
I was like, yes. Green belt? I was
no,
like,
not an actual green. Yeah, the belt thing's kind of interesting. So it later turned into a Lean Six Sigma black belt. So yes, I did in fact go through all the hoops through an institute in Colorado. So it's
of course they call it green there.
Yeah, well, no, green was the green. All right. Green was Omaha. That's all right. So Lean Six Sigma, they are in fact two different things. So you've got the processes of lean. And so that's a lot of the times going to be your 10 types of waste, and are your processes efficient, and can you time save or process save or not overproduce or overcreate something?
Typically found in manufacturing lean. Settings.
That's
correct?
Right. That's right. Yeah. And then Six Sigma. So this is one where you really need a lot of data for, and a lot of companies aren't ready for this for a long time. So it's when 99% success rate, when you have a process and you need the process to hit that nearly every time, and it deviates here and there. Well, if you have a process like landing planes that needs to be better than 99%, 99% is not a good enough course of measure. Mm. So that's where Six Sigma comes in, and it turns into these teeny tiny micro percents of where near 100% success rate exists. And you measure off of the data points. Yeah. So yes, that's what Lean Six Sigma is. It's the statistical measure of success rates or efficiencies in businesses.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
So no.
Yeah, there you go.
Really? Yeah. Mm. I worked for ConAgra and IBM. Like that was a thing. Six
yep.
Sigma.
Yep.
Black belt. Okay, so IT, why real estate? What happened there?
Yeah, it was a little bit.
Where did you go wrong?
It was a little bit of an accident, right? Like, how's this tech dude and this programmer and this like big data diver to end up in sales? I flipped a house, and my real estate agent, you know, he helped me buy a house and sell a house. He made, I think, end to end, maybe $6,000 total, something like that. When I flipped the house, it was my first, and I didn't go backwards, so I'll call it a success. But I only probably made, realistically, if we crunch the numbers, about $3,000. And I'm like, well, I'm a math guy. Duh. How about I get a real estate license and I just get to like improve the margins? That just makes sense to me. And so I got a real estate license, never thinking that I would represent anyone or help anyone or do anything. And I got a license, started going down that road of another investment. And I had a coworker learn somehow that I had a license. And they said, hey, I heard you had a license. Can you show us a house? And I said, I got a key fob, but I don't really know. Are you sure? And I was very real about, I don't know what I'm doing here. Are you really, really sure? And they're like, no, it'll be fun. And sure enough, I sold them a house here right off of Dodge Street in Omaha. And I got this check for $2,400. And as in the real estate agent side, we would all define and know that if a deal falls in your lap and you're not having to drum up business and create a full-time income out of it, you know, something just showing up, it is of the best income that you could possibly make for the amount of hours and time that go in it, as long as you're able to do it, right? But the hard part about being full-time in that career is drumming up the new business and actually having enough of them that it would then be a full-time income. And so I then had my position eliminated in the process improvement design world and process improvement sector. And I worked at, am I going to be a business analyst? Am I not? Like, what's that going to look like? And after a winter, I decided I'd lean into the real estate world and go, well, I sold one. Maybe I can sell four in a year and get a commission check, pay a debt off and take a vacation, whatever. And so I got a full-time job as a finance and operations director. And at the same time, I dove into real estate and I sold 27 houses at the same time while I had a full-time job over the next 7 months or so. And I didn't realize until about 3 or 4 years later of this actually occurred year over year of the same kind of growth, 32 sales the next year and 36 the next year. And I didn't realize it was because I was putting in about a fourth of the time of what most real estate agents were putting in, because I was able to code and program and outsource and automate all of these processes and systems. And whether it was technology doing it for me or virtual assistants doing it for me, I was able to just not have to put in all of the time, but still produce the results. And I could stick to the relationship components and the actual person-to-person pieces that people wanted. And so I ended up falling into real estate that way, and then scaling it so that other agents could use the system.
What I like about what you're describing is, you know, you mentioned the 80-20 rule earlier, and basically that's Pareto's law? Is that
that's right.
So you get the most results out of 20% of something, and the 80% is basically a waste. Or I'm butchering this, but you get the gist of it. You get more out of the 20% than you do the 80. And what I like about what you just said is, a couple things. One thing is, you mentioned that it's the easiest income you'll make if you're not a full-time agent, because mm-hmm. you're not really putting in all the work that generally is required to spit out leads that right. actually close.
Right.
Right. So it's inbound versus outbound almost.
Yep.
And those are much easier to close. And so that's interesting mm-hmm. as like just a thought experiment. But then the other thing is, like, I was just thinking, and I know you're a systems and process guy, and you've described your background in IT yep. and your passion for coding and all that. That makes sense. And your early days as a amateur auto mechanic,
yeah.
discovering how things work. So I'm kind of playing around with this thought in my head of, you're kind of eliminating most of the 80% by streamlining the processes and systems so that people can live off of the 20%. Yeah. That they would normally only get to enjoy after putting in 80% of the bullshit.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, when I was 8 years old, my sister called me ambitiously lazy. And I didn't know that there was actual official terms.
I love that.
Lean Six Sigma and affinity diagrams and all of this stuff. I didn't know there was real terms of smarter, not harder. No, I was just ambitiously lazy is how she defined me. And it really was, she's like, you're willing to outwork anyone so that you don't have to work. And I was like, is this an insult or a conversation? Like, what is it? Yeah, that sounds good to me. And I don't know that that's ever gone away.
What's the saying? Entrepreneurs are willing to work 100 hours a week so that they don't have to work 40 hours a week.
That's right.
Or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. But that's, you're kind of taking the opposite track where you're like, how can I streamline this so that my time is, which, you know, as we know, time gets more and more valuable the older you get, right?
Yep.
They don't make more of it. It's like dirt.
Yep.
And I like the fact that you're making it a mission to basically allow enjoyment for yourself unashamedly.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? That's exactly right. I mean, I really thought about
ambitiously lazy.
I thought about, what do I want to spend my time doing? Well, if that's what I want to spend my time doing and enjoying, well, then how about I, one, either do it, or two, work at building my life that allows it, and actually make sure that every plan that I make or every company I start or everything that I'm pursuing has that degree of intentionality behind it. Even if I have to take a hot minute to fix other decisions that I made before that weren't in line with that, fine, fix the decisions so then you're on the solid footing, and then build what you actually want to be living.
Just working for that early retirement.
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. Which, again, so now, you know, my sister runs a Gallup Strengths coaching consultation company down in Dallas. And one of the things that we've talked about a ton is what someone's nature is and natural gifts and strength and talents and strengths. Because if you can find yourself in that zone, you won't even feel like you're working. You're just playing. You'd actually suck at teaching it because you don't know how you do it. Well, one of my natures is, we can summarize it as problem solving. I've got strategic at number one and individualization at number two. So coming up with these left field, seemingly unrelated solutions to how can you do this? How can you build that life? How can you offload some junk process that you don't want to be living and breathing in your business or in your life? I see the connections, and I can help people with the connections. And so having done that in my own life, I then have turned it into the consulting business to where now I can actually help other people in their own companies, even if it's not in the same industry as me, it doesn't matter. That's all the same life creation and life options design that I can do with some solutioning and help that way.
Okay, Trevor, how did you get into, you mentioned a flip. That's kind of how you got your entree into real estate in general. How long was it until your next one? And then how did that lead into other things that you're doing now, like rental properties and so forth?
Yeah, so I did the first flip a couple of years before I got my real estate license. And the license getting then turned into the one client and the coworker, and then several others after that. My next flip, honestly, was a bit of a ways down the road. I had a bit of a total life implosion. I had an artery get torn in my neck. It didn't stretch a normal distance.
What?
And I had a flap in the innermost layer. It's a vertebral artery dissection that split, and that flap inside of an artery slammed against the other side of the artery wall and shut the blood off to the left side of my brain, and I had a couple of TIA strokes back in 2014 or so. And so at the same time,
Sounds serious.
It was pretty serious. Yep. And so I got to experience a whole life moment of, is everything changed forever? You know, do I get any feeling back in the entire right side of my face? I made a call to my dad telling him I was going to the hospital, and he couldn't understand me because I didn't have control of my lips. And
did you think you were saying the right, like, and did you hear yourself saying what you thought you were saying?
Sounded fine to me.
No kidding.
It really did.
I don't know that I've, like, my grandmother died of a stroke. Mm-hmm. My great aunt died of a stroke. Yep. But they never talked again after that. So I don't know like what they were feeling. I've never had the opportunity to really ask anybody. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I thought he had to tell me weeks later that he was like, yeah, I couldn't understand you. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I said, the ambulance is coming and I'm headed to the hospital. Like, I had no idea that he couldn't understand me.
My mother-in-law is the same. She's had multiple strokes. And to this point right now, it's been a couple years since her last one. Mm-hmm. But she will say words and she always mixes up simple things like he, she, for instance. So every time she's talking,
pronouns.
Yep. So my son's always a she and so on. And she doesn't even realize that's happening.
Yeah.
And we'll correct her and she's like, what's wrong? And it's always simple things like that that get mixed up in every single conversation that she has.
Yeah.
Biggest heart, you know, not going against her. It's just the, you know, what happened with this. So I totally understand what you're saying right there.
Yeah. Yeah. So I walked out of it. Well, while I was in it, you know, in the moment, I didn't know if that meant I now had half a body. The second tear happened 2 days later, and that one came on much slower, and I lost muscle, the ability to use the muscle. I mean, when the first one happened, I could force myself to stand up. It felt like I had pins and needles, and I could lean against a wall, and I could straighten my arm, and I could lock my knee out.
You just powered through it, basically.
Right, and it felt like you'd slept on an arm for all night long, and you woke up, and it was all numb and dead, but it hurt and tingly. The second one wasn't like that. The second one, I could not lift my own ankle against the weight of gravity. Like, if I stuck my foot out, I couldn't lift my hand, or lift my leg. And then if I put my hand out, the fastest I could move my hand, I remember looking at it, and I was in the hospital at the time, and as fast as I could open my hand was really just a snail's pace. That's all I could do. And so, that second one, as it came on, I mean, it came on slowly with my ankle went numb, my wrist, and then my forearm and my calf, and then my thigh and my bicep, and then my abdomen and my breathing changed because half your diaphragm stops working the way it's supposed to. And then all of a sudden my shoulder, and I remember I was like leaning away from my own shoulder.
I'm getting anxious. Just listening. It's almost like you're changing into a, to like, you know,
it was,
like
it was
venom.
It was
or
just
something.
Like that. It, you know, seriously, I mean? Felt like a venom thing. Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, as it crept up like the back of my skull and like in my face, and then my eye went black. And the whole time,
oh my God.
Yeah. The second time I was like, is this where you spiral to darkness?
I mean, did you think you were dying?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I knew it was viable. I knew it wasn't necessarily the only outcome.
Were you in the hospital at this time?
Yeah, I was at the hospital, and you know, the nursing staff, and they were there, and they were good, and they were like, well, we need a CAT scan, you and make sure you're not bleeding in the brain or anything like that, and make sure you're not, like, you know, fatal. And then after they did a few of those scans, they were like, all right, our plan is to see how you are in the morning. And I remember looking at the nurse, and I was like, I don't know if you've ever had half your body shut off, but see how you are in the morning isn't a good enough plan.
Yeah. And they're basically like, we don't know what the hell to do. They walk out in the hallway. They're like all shrugging, now, looking at each other. Like, I don't know. Let's see if he makes it.
How long does it go on for?
Well, so it was only the two instances. One was on a Monday and one was on a Wednesday. And it was just a fluke. It's like somebody breaking a femur. I don't have a family history of it. It was the season of all of the other pressures that were going on. It had to do with a chiropractic adjustment that I had. It was right there on his table, actually. It was when it happened. And
shut the front door.
Nope, that did. I really.
I go to the chiropractor.
I know.
All
I
the
was
time.
Dancing. Yeah, yeah. I know. I was dancing around it a little bit.
Did you stop going?
I was gonna not. No. So actually, I really still love chiropractic. Now I don't have my neck adjusted. My neurosurgeon and my neurologist, they were like, we've done adjustments here in the hospital. Like, we're not gonna rip on chiropractics. No. It there is good. They said in your neck, there's just a higher risk of error. And I was like, case in point.
Do you not crack your own neck now? Like, because I roll my neck every day to like snap it.
I don't think I want to answer that question on a recorded
line. Do you avoid that?
Yeah. No, not really. No, but I think because, you know, if you are not using your own hands to like snap your neck or whatever, like if you're just using your own muscles in your neck, if it pops, well, it's just releasing different, you know, gas that's between the vertebrae. And it's not unsafe.
Is that on your mind every time?
Not as much as when the neck stretching. When the talking, though, you talked about, you said your grandma, is that right? Your mom, who had the
mother-in-law.
Yeah. Thank you. Your mother-in-law. So I came out of that whole experience with a lot of things, but one with an incredible paranoia for when I'm speaking. And so I'm always monitoring. I'm like, did I just stumble over my words in a normal way? Or did I stumble over my words in a stroke way?
Well, I tell you what, we just watched you present in the last few weeks at a local meetup, and I mean, you did a great job. Your speaking was on point.
Thanks.
Yeah, but you did not hit the story in that presentation, which I'm kind of shocked because this is what usually a lot of people focus on that have gone through these life moments.
I've been like ever since you mentioned this, I've been paying a lot more attention to like your speech and your dictation.
Yeah.
Like you're very precise. You're not slurring yet either. So that's good.
Yeah. No.
This is the old fashioned, not the TIA.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. And maybe I'm not like heightened in on it. I don't know.
But no, that's interesting though. So now you're hyper aware of that, or it's always in the back of your mind as a thing. That was always one thing about strokes that fascinated me was the inability of the person that had it to recognize that their own speech is impaired.
Yeah.
Like you think you're saying, hearing your own voice, but nobody else is hearing the same thing that you are in your head. It's so weird because I think your brain is tricking your ears, right? Well, I mean, that's basically what's happening.
Yeah, and I think it's a lot of what Ted was talking about with if you do stumble over something, it's usually one of the most subconscious he-she items that you're not giving a lot of attention to. And so you're not actually listening to your own he-she items, right? You would just stumble and falter and all of a sudden...
Your words are catching up with your thoughts,
right? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anytime I do stumble over a word,
you're like, oh God, what's happening? Am I dying?
I think I've even caught myself like straightening and closing my own right hand just to make sure that I've got functionality going on.
Totally.
Because that's where it was started. I was like, oh man, I can't use my hand.
You probably have PTSD for it.
Probably a little bit. Yeah. I think I have it under control, it was wild.
No, I've had a near death moment in my life. Have you guys had any near death moments in your guys' life?
Yeah. Three or four, actually.
Like a bunch. Yeah, several.
Does San Diego count?
Just visiting?
we're elaborating for people who don't know that dead list.
You want me to tell her or you want to tell it?
Go ahead.
Taylor's just laughing so hard you can't talk.
We've already told this story a couple of times, but we were in the Bigger Pockets Conference in San Diego last year, and we were looking for this restaurant that Ted was insistent that we go to.
You're welcome.
And We had to, we were walking along and
the videos,
it's a long ass walk.
Videos because, are on Instagram if you want to watch it.
Okay, perfect. That's what I need.
We all look over at the same time and we notice there's three of those like scooter things that you can rent.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Just like ditched on the side, right on the other side of the street. So we all look at each other like, should we?
And let's be the old dads.
Yeah, exactly.
This is totally one of those like guy moments, like why men die sooner than women scenarios. Yeah, this is one of those.
So Dennis is like flying ahead of us. He's got like the fast one, or maybe he's just not fat like me and Ted are.
Right. True.
But he takes off and we like he almost got killed
twice.
Yeah, the first time was. I mean, I was like, oh God. I saw the whole thing. I mean, it was like
a
train wreck.
There was a car coming out of a parking lot.
Okay.
And he did not see me. Like, he literally didn't even look in my direction. He just came, and I was like, oh.
He swerved and almost dumped it. And like, and then the other one, anyway. So back to your story.
Referring to my question, though, I mean, have you guys ever had a medical issue where you didn't think you'd be alive the next day?
No,
nobody can hear you when you're that far from the mic.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
If only we had a sound guy.
Yeah, can we get a tech guy in here that maybe knows how the equipment works?
Can we get a podcast producer in here to help him?
Good thing you got me.
Thank you, Ted. Thank you for showing up today. I appreciate that.
That never happened to me like in an internal, just something happening to me like that, like a medical problem. But there was external forces that
you thought somebody's gonna murder you?
No, oh, okay. No. I just got so high that I hallucinated really badly. Ooh. And like was vomiting.
You say high?
Yeah.
Meth. So,
what was it on?
Marijuana.
It was on weed.
So that
you got
story,
that high? Was that, it on? Was there angel dust
that
involved?
That story is going to come when you guys have me on the podcast.
Oh, you're on
a podcast every time.
You're not supposed to eat it.
Such a cock tease.
What about you?
I have never. Well, I've been in like car accidents, and well,
I've been in those too. But I mean, you never had a medical issue, because I feel like a medical issue, you got a lot more thinking time about what's going on in your life and where you're gonna be tomorrow.
I got a quick one. You want me to tell it?
Yeah.
So I'm 14. I have my tonsils removed, and it's about a week later. I am getting ready for bed, and so have you guys had your tonsils taken out?
No.
No.
What? No. Are you serious?
Yeah. I've had my wisdom teeth removed. Does that make you feel better?
I'm in a room of four people. I'm the only one. This is bizarre. I assume 90% of adults have their tonsils.
You know, one in four people
what?
Have their tonsils.
Oh, yeah.
And three-fourths judges
one,
you.
One.
I've been circumcised. Does that count?
Oh, my God. Gross.
Obviously, you haven't.
No. No, I have not that I want to share that
oh my
is my
gosh.
Point.
What kind of podcast is this? Yeah.
For God's sake, Ted. I hope you're
I'm just trying to make you
I hope your editing fingers are warmed up.
I'm trying to help you feel more comfortable in things that we might have all done at the table.
Owen, you can't talk about fingers after a
Jeez,
comment like
are
that.
Are you kidding me?
All right. What were you saying about tonsils? Let's get back to that.
My God. What a leap that is. They're not even the same part of body. Anyway, so I have my tonsils out, and here's the deal with this. So you can't eat anything regular, right, for like at least a week, if not 2 weeks. So you're just eating like soft foods and whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I do that. You know, I'm following their, you know, guidelines or whatever. But like the thing is, this is kind of gross, but like you're always like hacking loogies up, right? Because you have a huge, gigantic scab in the back of your throat, basically, once it starts healing. And so I'm getting ready for bed, and I'm going to brush my teeth. And I'm in the bathroom, and I get done, and I like, you know, kind of like clear my throat, and I spit, and it's like the huge blood clot.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, whoa, and then all of a sudden, like I'm choking on my own blood, like it's pouring out of my mouth. I mean, like alarming. It was like The Exorcist. I mean, like I have blood just dumping in the sink. And I was like, oh my God. And I try to yell for my mom, and I'm like gargling in my own blood. I'm like, ah, you know, like she comes running and she's like, oh my God. Like she'll love this, me doing her voice. But
we love your voices.
Yeah. But she, so she calls the ambulance, right? And like I don't know what's going on. I'm 14, right? And I'm just like, I'm panicking because all this blood's coming out, and which, you know, is spiking my blood pressure. Mm-hmm. So it's just making it worse. Oh, yeah. And I'm just like, oh my God. And then so a little while goes by and it kind of like slows down a little bit. But then the paramedics show up and they come in. They're like, he's fine. You know, do you want us to take him? I guess they're kind of looking at each other like, what are we doing here type thing. And then and my mom's like, no, there was so much blood and whatever. Cause I think we had let it down the sink by that time and or washed it out. And they're like, okay, sure, lady, we'll take your son to the hospital, even though it's not needed. So I get on the ambulance and I don't remember what they're going to put an IV in or something, I think. And I'm not a huge needle fan, or I wasn't back then. Not that I am now.
He likes needles now, though.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, yeah, that didn't come out right. But so, yeah, well, you're into heroin. I mean, what are you going to do? I'm in the ambulance, and they were doing something where they were going to, like, for some reason, my blood pressure spiked again, and then it just started coming out of my mouth, and I was, like, choking, and I couldn't breathe. And they're like, oh, God, wow, this is pretty serious. So they, like, take me to the hospital. And they have to put me under and, like, cauterize the back of my throat, right? So they have to, like, fry it. And, I thought I was going to die. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if I was going to wake up. So that's my only – and it's kind of anticlimactic. But, like, yeah, I wasn't sure I was going to make it. Like, yeah. That was a lot of blood. I was choking on my own blood before I got put under by the anesthesia. Wow. That's my last memory.
Yeah.
And then I come to and, you know.
That's rough.
That is. Good. That's crazy.
And I had spaghetti that night. That was my first like solid meal that I had. And you know, I was like, what the hell? Yeah. So I've never talked to anybody that's had that similar story with tonsils being removed. Now I know why, because 3 out of 4 people don't. Because
apparently
do it.
They don't even do it. Yeah.
So I'm just so I just need to talk to more people.
I've had a blood choking situation though. That was actually just about a year and a half ago. I had my dog, I had an English bulldog. And rest her soul in peace. Yeah. But anyway, so she came up and was like, wanted to say hi to me, and she like nudged up on me, and she has, you know, those two little fang teeth that came up, and it went right through my face and then cut my face in half.
You
right
remember?
Here.
He had a blister.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
I remember the amount of blood. It was just crazy, and not to your case in any way, but I just remember the amount of blood and having it go down my throat. And I'm like, oh, this is awful. Mm-hmm. But no, my story was I had West Nile.
During you looked horrible
during COVID.
You were yellow. You looked jaundiced.
Yeah. For 5 weeks, I had a temperature of 102 to 105, and they wouldn't let me in hospital because
of COVID. Oh my gosh!
And
that's right when Ted
just
bought the Rhea.
Yeah.
Wow. So he was just kicking that off as his own deal.
I had to have the original owner of it come back and do the presentation because I didn't have enough strength to stand.
Wow.
And I sat in the back of the room and watched him do it.
Wow.
And but yeah, the 102 to 105 degrees and I started passing out and they wouldn't let me in hospital, and they got to a point where it was like the night before they finally admitted me, and I was like, I'm not going to live till tomorrow. So I started putting my affairs in order.
Yep.
And I didn't think I was going to be alive the next day.
You were having affairs.
So, yep. While circumcised. But I wasn't neutered yet.
What the hell, man? Hey,
it started there. I thought I'd bring it full circle.
And I thought I'd just add to it.
You're welcome. Yeah, that's great.
So I can relate to a point. Yours is way more serious, but I did not think I was going to live the next day. Yeah. And it puts things in perspective on how you think about life.
Yeah.
And how you think about your kids and how you're going to pass things on, especially when you only got 24 hours to really start thinking about, like, what do I, you know, what am I going to do here and how my affairs going to look?
Yeah. 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 I would think, I mean, no matter what someone's situation or the story is or the details, I mean, if somebody feels like I'm not going to make it to tomorrow, it has that same effect.
I think that next time you do these presentations in front of people, you should probably lead off with this
story.
With
that one. Yeah. I've thought about writing a book and having that story of the actual dialogue between me and the chiropractor being the opening to the book.
Who's that big real estate investor that almost died and he has a crazy
AJ Osborne.
AJ Osborne.
Yeah. He was paralyzed.
Yeah.
Now he's like the self-storage.
And that was like the pinnacle point of his change of life. And,
Yeah. In reality, it really is mine too. There's a story that's laid into this that, I've struggled to tell without breaking down into tears.
Oh, now I want to.
Now you want to know the story?
Yeah.
We got to do this.
We like to hear the tears.
You want the tears? Yes. All right. Well, I think I can do it without. But
I'll give you a hug.
I'll give you a hug. All right.
Take a chug so that the tears come out.
Take this. Yeah. Okay. Perfect.
Sounds like a lot of the plane conductors these days. What do they call those?
Pilots?
No, the air
traffic controllers.
Air traffic controllers, yeah.
Radio edit.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot of the radio
edits. Radio edits.
I remember back when I was a radio editor.
Radio edit. All right. And Shade?
Shade.
Okay. I just wanted... No. Originally, I was Shada, so I wanted to make sure.
A few moments later.
Shade. Oh, just use the last version I did.
All that effort.
You need a booster seat over there?
I feel like I do.
Hey, Trevor, you need the Colin Schwartz booster seat.
Two kids.
And names?
Rannon.
R-A-N-I-N?
R-A-N-O-N, but yeah, Rannon and Kaler.
Kaler.
K-A-Y?
K-A-L-E-R.
Not K-A-L-E-R.
K-E.
I can't wait for him to pronounce this.